Good evening. Now this evening, I was asked to talk about Moses and him being adopted. And as the brother Mark, I believe, was sharing, and when he was talking about the things that we need and the things we don't need, I thought of a very unique thing about Moses. Moses, by being adopted, was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But he was also the daughter of Pharaoh's son. And that's a true statement. Don't look at me like that. What's that? So he was the son of Pharaoh's daughter, but he was also the daughter of Pharaoh's son. It depends on how you where you put your comma there. So this morning we're going, or this evening we're going to be looking a little bit at, especially we're going to be looking in Exodus chapter 2 and 3. And when we think about Moses, I had this problem to try to take Moses' life and condense it into a little bit. I mean, we could take a lot of instances of Moses' life and could preach a whole sermon on one thing. And here I'm supposed to take all of this and sort of put it all together in something that's concise and hopefully brief enough. And I did notice that I was not given an end time. So at least you can't blame me for that if it goes too long. But one thing I was thinking of as I'm thinking about adoption and stuff like that, there's one thing that I see over and over and over, and this is not just adopted people. It's all of us. And yet you see this thing coming out a lot more with adoption. And it's this longing that we all have to belong. And this longing to be loved. Interestingly enough, together with that, a lot of times we don't know what this truly means. And we don't really know what it means for me and how to incorporate that into my reality. And because of that, there's a lot of things that happen in our interpersonal relationships, especially when it relates to adoption. And for some people, they just sort of they try to sort of shun it. They try to shun the love and the security that is shown to them, while at the same time they long for it so hard. And then others, they make this an idol, and I have to belong and I have to be loved. Which can do something else, which is it can lead us to try to prove that we are worthy of love. And it can make us look for love in places where we should not. Those are all, and that's why some people think, well, it's not related. In my mind, a lot of that whole picture is all related, even though some people react one way and others react another way. Now we're going to start reading here in Exodus chapter 2. There in verse 1, talking about Moses, the adopted servant of God. And there went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. Now, what were the names of Moses' parents? Anyone? His mom? Jochebed, his dad? Amram, you're right. And when they could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river. And her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it and saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses. And she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." And it came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, that he went out to his brethren and looked on their burdens. And his... Actually, I'll just stop reading there. I'll get to that later. Now, interestingly enough, according to Josephus, the reason that Pharaoh was killing these children was because one of his scribes had prophesied that there was going to be a young boy born that would then end up breaking the Egyptians' hold on the Hebrews, but as well, he was going to be quite the man. And he was going to do a lot of very great things. And so in this sense, Moses was sort of like Jesus. And Pharaoh tried, that is why he was trying to kill all the boys. Because he thought, if I kill all the boys, well, I'll for sure get the one. But as I say sometimes, it sort of seems like God has a sense of humor. The very man who was killing all the other boys ended up probably paying for the raising of this child, who ended up being the downfall of the whole Egyptian, of Egypt. I mean, it's fascinating how God can take stories in our stories and can do something really amazing if we allow him to. Now, I don't know how many of you here are adopted. And I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands. And I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands of how many of you struggle with the fact that you are adopted. But here was a man that by necessity, he had to be adopted. Moses had to be adopted to bring God's plan to fruition. If he wouldn't have gotten adopted, he would have gotten killed. Now, Moses could have lived his life whining about, I'm adopted. But we don't see that in Moses. And I see people who were adopted, as well as sometimes I see their adoptive parents, also making excuses because, well, I'm adopted. Or he's adopted or she's adopted. What else can we expect? I don't see that in Moses. Moses didn't whine. And he didn't make any excuses. And again, according to extra-biblical history, Moses actually became a very brilliant general in the Egyptian army. I mean, fascinating. And he ended up, he was in line to become the next king. According to the history that I read, it seemed like that was sort of what it was going for. He would have been the next king. And in Acts 7, verse 22, it says, he was mighty in words and in deed. He was quite the man. And yet, he was adopted. Now, going on there in verse 11, starting to read there in Exodus chapter 11. And it came, chapter 2, verse 11, sorry. And it came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens. And he spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way. And when he saw there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And he went out on the second day. Behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. And he said to him that did the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou smitest the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well. Now the priests of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. And when they came to Reuel, his father, he said, how is it that ye are come to so soon today? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds, and also drew water enough for us, and watered the flock. And he said unto his daughters, and where is he? Why is it that ye have left the man? Call him, that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter. And she bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land. And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. And God heard their groanings. And God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. Now, as I think of that portion right there, thinking of somebody else who also had something to do in Egypt, Joseph. You know, he was there for a very specific time. Joseph went through some very hard times to accomplish what God wanted. And now many years later, here we have Moses going through some hard times and some hard things as well to accomplish God's will. Going on in chapter 3, verse 1. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. And he said, draw not nigh thither, but put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place wherein thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land, out of that land, into a good land, and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, Who am I, that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee, that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say unto me, What is thy name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. And God said moreover unto Moses, Thus thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, The Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together, and say unto them, The Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, and Isaac, and of Jacob, appeared unto me, saying, I have surely visited you, and seen that which is done to you in Egypt. And I have said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. And they shall hearken to thy voice, and thou shalt come, thou and the elders of Israel, unto the land of Egypt. And you shall say unto him, The Lord God of the Hebrews hath met with us, and now let us go, we beseech thee, 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. And I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, no, not by a mighty hand. And I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof. And after that he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And it shall come to pass that when ye go, ye shall not go empty. Now we've probably all read that story as well. We've probably heard of this. And I was, as I was pondering this part of Moses' life, it looks to me like at the beginning, Moses knew something. Moses knew about life. Moses was a general. Moses was going to be the next king. He knew stuff. He understood life. According to Acts, there where Stephen was talking, he says that Moses, at this point, when he went out to see his brethren, he was 40 years old already. So he was a mature man, very well educated, could speak well, and he knew where he was going. Now God had a purpose, a very specific purpose for him. He had drawn him out of the water for that purpose. He had kept him alive for that purpose. But Moses, as I see this whole picture, Moses was still not ready to do the work that God had for him. Moses at this point was still the accomplished general. He was still the man who knew stuff. But then, by the time we get to the end of what we read here, he didn't know much. He didn't know much. Moses later even said that he didn't even know how to speak. And at one time, he was this man who could lead. He knew how to speak. He was in the king's palace. And later, he didn't even know how to talk. Amazing. When Moses saw God, he changed. That's what happens to us as well. When we see God for who he is, that's when our ideas and our plans can shrink really fast. And that's the first thought that came to my mind. And then I got to thinking, you know what? How long did it take for Moses to get to this point? How old was Moses when God appeared to him there here in Horeb? 80 years old. That's right. Thank you. He was 80 years old. He has spent 40 years out there tending sheep. It took him 40 years to come to the point where God could use him. And I just got to thinking, you know, our desert experiences out there herding sheep sometimes can get long and they can get lonely. But God has a purpose. God has a plan for each one of us, even in those experiences. And God doesn't waste those moments. See, God, we're not here for our own agendas and for our own things. And if we think that that's why we're here, then I hope we can all change our minds. Because that's not why we're here. We're not here to feel good. We're not here to accomplish our own things. We're here with one purpose. God put us here. And this is one thing I want you all to get a hold of as well. You know, sometimes people who are adopted sometimes think, well, I'm not worth anything. You know, my family maybe abandoned me or who knows what. You know that just the fact that we are here, that we are alive, God has a specific purpose for each one of us. And a lot of times we don't understand that today. You know, I've gone through quite a few things in life already. And the reality is this, I still haven't figured it out. There's still a lot of things that I question as to, God, why do I have to go through this? And God, why me? Why me? And yet God has a purpose and a plan. And I can rest in it. That if God wakes me up today and gives me breath today to live, it's because he has a purpose and he has a plan for me. I may not understand it. And maybe the reason why I'm here is maybe still way in the future. I don't know. But God has a very specific purpose. He has a very specific plan for me. And he wants for me to follow in that. Now, I understand. We can all decide to not fall in with God's plan. That's possible as well, unfortunately. And God gives each of us the ability to do our own choosing, good or bad. But God has a purpose and a plan for us, and he doesn't waste time. Now, Numbers, and here's one thing that sort of grabbing out of the middle of everything else. Numbers 12, verse 3, it tells us something very interesting about Moses. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. Now, it says that in the middle of a story. It's talking about how his sister and his brother were getting upset, and they were trying to take a position that they should not be filling. And then in the middle of that, it says, Moses was a very meek man. He was the most meek of all the people, of all the men there were. Now, it doesn't say women, so we don't know if there were, you know, meeker women out there, right? At least in the King James anyway. But, you know, here was a man that was very, very meek. How did he get that way? How did he get that way? I'm sure that didn't just happen. He didn't just become meek overnight. He went through some things. He had to learn. The hard things in life, you know, those are the things that God used to shape his character. And as Moses found out, being a leader isn't always easy. There's people who think, if I would be the leader, you know, wow, it'd be easy. They haven't been the leader. They haven't been the leader. It takes a lot of meekness. It takes a lot of service. And personal stuff that the rest of the people in the congregation or the rest of the people in the community or the rest of the people at the job could get away with. Leader can't get away with it. Have you ever noticed that? Leader can't get away with it. He gets nailed for every time. And most times he's misunderstood on top of it. Just how it happens. It takes a lot of meekness. And in this case here, it talks about that Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. I'm not going to say that these folks were racist, but they were saying, that Ethiopian woman. And the Bible doesn't clarify that. But if we go to other writings, other ancient writings, this could easily have been, because it doesn't seem like it was about his wife that the priest gave him. It seems like it was someone else. It was an Ethiopian. And as I was looking at this whole thing, interestingly enough, in one of the first campaigns he did, what really made him the general that stood out, there was this one city. The Ethiopians had come into Egypt and had taken over, and they were just destroying. And here Moses was this young man. And as I understand, he was somehow was it prophesied or whatever that Moses was the one who should take the lead of the army, and he went out and did brilliantly, and as the last part of the campaign, the Ethiopians came into one of their cities, which was surrounded by rivers, and it was sort of an island. And so, then it still had walls out around it, and so it was really, really hard to get into that city. Well, one of the king's daughters, one of the princes, watching Moses from afar, fell in love with him. And she sent someone out and said, I want to marry you. He said, okay. It's fine, under this condition, that you also give over the city. And then we'll be done with the campaign, and according to the story, that's how it happened. That's not in the Bible, but it was just fascinating to me to see that the Bible also talks about this Ethiopian woman. So, not sure if I'm reading it all right or not, but this might be the one. Anyone else could have probably gotten away with having that Ethiopian woman. But Moses as a leader was a little bit hard. Now, the other thing that I was, as I was thinking about Moses, have you ever wondered about his parents? Moses didn't just become Moses. He was taught. He was trained. Now, we know that he was taught all the knowledge and the wisdom of the Egyptians. But what happened before that? What happened on his mother's knee? What happened while he was still there being taken care of by his parents? Moses knew. And Moses, in some way, he recognized these were his brethren out there. Moses understood who he was and that he was not an Egyptian, even though he had all of this. And yet he understood there was a God in heaven. He understood some of those things that doesn't look like the Egyptians, they obviously didn't follow God. And yet his parents taught him something. And Josephus would tell us that his father was a very devout man and one who was earnestly praying for the situation that they were in. And he was crying out to God, God, why? Why are we as your children? Why are we under this oppression? Why is this going on? And other writings would actually indicate to us that he, as well as quite a few of the Israelite men, put aside their wives for a while because they didn't want to be killing babies. And so said, okay, if this is what it's going to be, we're just not going to live with our wives. And God very specifically talked to him and said, look, I want you to live with your wife again. And she is going to have a son that is going to be the one who will lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. He is the one who I will make great. And he is going to be one that isn't just going to be known just among your people. He's going to be known worldwide. He's going to be known by all people in all generations. Fascinating. And my question was, would Moses have become the servant of God that he was if he would not have had parents who prayed, parents who taught him? I don't think so. So here's my point. Parents need to be discerning prayer warriors. And it takes actually very little to conceive and to adopt. It takes very little time. But it takes a lifetime of prayer, an example to lead our children in the way that they should go. And we could talk all evening about Moses and the miracles. We probably all know the story of the Red Sea crossing. Fascinating. Amazing what God did for his people through Moses. The water. He struck the rock and the water came out. The story of how they prevailed in battle by him lifting his arms. You know, fascinating stories. Someone who allowed himself to be taught by God, meek and humble. But as I was thinking over this whole thing, you know, he was adopted. Moses was adopted. Adopted, yet it didn't scar him. Adopted, yet it didn't define him. Adopted, yet he was the servant of God. I find that amazing. And God, like I said before, has a purpose and a plan for each one of us. I don't even know what God has in store for me. I'm not even sure what purpose he has for me. But I do know one thing. It's a good purpose. It's a good plan. And many times I feel a lot like when I read through Hebrews 11. And see how these people went through so many different things. And they suffered so many different things. And yet by faith they lived. They didn't even see the end result of their faith. For many of them, it was thousands of years later. And yet, they lived by faith today. They continued to walk. They continued to do God's plan. They continued to do what they knew how to do that day. And they continued to live. And they passed on. They never received the promise, but they left a legacy. You know, maybe the reason we're here is because God needs very, very specifically one of our grandchildren. I don't know. Potentially. You know, children, I think you all should be thinking about this. I don't know how many of you are thinking already, you know, I'd like to get married sometime. Start praying for your grandchildren. That kind of perspective changes what I do today and how I live my life. God has a purpose and God has a plan for each one of us. Just like he did for Moses, even though he didn't understand it. And Moses didn't even get into the promised land. Yet, God had a purpose for him.